right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is December 17th, 2025. And our top story this morning, it's my favorite thing to talk about. Silver, $66. And there was much rejoicing. That's right, guys. My favorite of the white metals. The shiny broke 66 bucks overnight, both in the futures and the spot price. We hit a high overnight of 66.63 for the March silver contract. Have I ever mentioned that I like the shiny? Maybe I mentioned that once or twice. Gold to silver ratio is down to 65.7. Silver's actually right about average for the last 40 years in value relative to gold, which has me wondering, is gold going to start to outperform here? I've been kind of teasing that for the last couple of days. I'm expecting gold to resume its upward move pretty soon here. One warning, though. One thing I got to warn about, and man, I love watching silver rise. We have got options expiration on Friday this week. We've had a really nice run this week. We've now recovered more and then some from that sell-off in October. Typically around options expiration, my friend Bob Coleman over at Idaho Armored Vaults at Profits Plus ID, he's flagged this since June. We have seen a big surge in failures to deliver in SLV shares centered around options expiration. We get a price smash into that options expiration. Those options expire worthless, and then they create the SLV shares after options expiration, which would mean if that pattern holds, we're probably looking at a big red day sometime between now and Friday. Right? It's if that pattern holds, maybe we keep ripping. Maybe we're talking 70 bucks by Friday. It could happen. It's the 2020s, but be careful. We have seen some dirt baggery for sure around options expiration for several months in a row now. But hey, let's take the win, shall we? 66 bucks. Silver has more than doubled on the year. And regardless of what happens, maybe we do get a price smash this week. I'd be surprised if we didn't. This trend will continue. All the underlying strengths pushing precious metals higher are still there in the market. Also, let's talk about my other favorite topic to talk about on this channel, the AI bubble. In particular, this morning, data center builders having a hard time coming up with cash. This is pretty interesting. Blue Owl Capital, this story just broke this morning. Shout out to my moderator, Mish, who caught this one in the Financial Times. Blue Owl Capital has pulled out of a $10 billion data center project in Michigan that they were doing for Oracle. Now, listen to some of this language here. Lenders pushed for stronger leasing and debt terms amid shifting market sentiment. And therefore, the economics of the deal didn't look so good. Wow, stronger leasing and debt terms amid shifting market sentiment. Let's say it simple. The bubble has burst. It's already happened. We are already on the downslope of this ridiculous bubble. And it's just a shame it took so long to get here. This bubble ran on 2 years longer than it should have. So they asked private credit for money. Private credit's now saying no. Where else are you going to get enough money to keep a bubble inflated? If you guessed the government, congratulations, you're correct. Next up, government bailouts. OpenAI has hired George Osborne. He's on the payroll. Some of my UK melon heads from across the pond probably know that name. George Osborne was the former chancellor of the Exchequer. He was there, Janet Yellen, for a couple of years over there, I believe under when Carney was prime minister. He was chancellor of the Exchequer. Why would you put a former government finance minister on the payroll? Oh, that's right. The bailout that you swear you're not asking for over and over again. He's going to spearhead OpenAI's government sovereign data center projects. In other words, they're going to try to shift the burden of this bubble onto taxpayers in the UK and elsewhere. Nobody saw that coming. I told you they were going to reach for government bailouts. There's only a few places in the world where you can get enough money to keep this bubble inflated. And that's pretty much the last one, is the government's. Meanwhile, we've got Hut 8 stock is ripping this morning. The former Bitcoin miner now fancies themselves an AI data center. They have signed a 15-year, $7 billion lease with Anthropic, who, by the way, doesn't have $7 billion to pay for this lease. But that's okay, because mom and pop over at Google are co-signing the lease. Alphabet, or Google parent Alphabet, has backstopped the financials of this lease, which means if, for whatever reason, Anthropic can't pay for the lease or doesn't need it, Google is going to rent this data center. That's a pretty big liability that's going to have to live somewhere on Google's balance sheet. I don't know where. Maybe they're going to create some kind of special purpose finance vehicle off balance sheet arrangement where they're going to hide this so they don't have to report it in their quarterlies, something that Meta started doing. But look, why would Google do this? Why would Google go through this Bitcoin mining shitco and then backstop the lease for 15 years? Why not just have Google build it themselves? And, you know, Fernando de Leon is asking this question. He's a billionaire real estate developer in this CNBC article this morning. And he's wondering, if these data centers are such good investments, then how come none of these hyperscalers want them on their balance sheets? That's interesting. If it's so good, how come you're trying to hide it somewhere else using third parties, using special purpose vehicles in order to hide that? Well, maybe some of these hyperscalers could ask the question. Meanwhile, OpenAI is signing a $10 billion deal with Amazon, which would see OpenAI using Amazon's Trainium chips. That's interesting because we just had Meta cut this deal with Google to use Google's TPUs. Now, OpenAI is using Amazon's Trainium chips. This can't be good for NVIDIA, right? Who previously had a total corner on the market. Apparently not anymore. Now Google and Amazon are eating into NVIDIA's market share. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. But you know, another interesting thing about this OpenAI Amazon deal this morning is the $500 billion valuation. Of course, I'm sure Amazon is paying with AWS cloud credits, right? That's the AI bubble funny money. They don't actually give any cash. They're just coupons for free data center rentals. That's as good as money. It's an IOU. You might want to hold on to that one. But a $500 billion valuation, once again, that's the same $500 billion valuation from the Disney deal that they cut for $1 billion recently. And also the same $500 billion valuation from back at the beginning of October, the last time OpenAI raised cash. Now, the interesting thing about that is prior to this, about every 6 months, OpenAI's valuation was doubling. You know, the $300 billion valuation, then to a $500, you know, before that it was $100 billion. It was doubling like every 6 months, just going up in a straight line every time OpenAI raised cash. Now they have been stuck at the same $500 billion valuation since the beginning of October. People are no longer willing to cough up cash at higher and higher valuations for this name because everybody knows the financials are garbage at OpenAI. And now OpenAI is being forced to sell off bigger and bigger pieces of itself to raise the money that it needs. That's interesting. Again, when OpenAI goes, this bubble goes with it, and that is looking increasingly likely. Other news going on this morning, we've got Tricolor's CEO has been charged with fraud related to the collapse of Tricolor Auto earlier this year. We kind of saw that one coming. President Trump has effectively blockaded Venezuela. All right, the war drums are beaten again. I think I know what's going on here in Venezuela, and I think I know why we're doing this. No, it's not drugs. It's all about oil. And I think it has a lot to do with that conflict in the Red Sea and the unfortunate reality of what we learned in that conflict, where our Navy performed admirably, but let's face facts, they did not really accomplish the mission. Only ending the war in Israel accomplished that mission. We were just burning through too much ammo and too much money trying to restore navigation in the Red Sea. Also going on, we've got German defense stocks are rallying this morning. Germany's about to sign a $60 billion defense bill. Anything that goes boom is doing good over in Europe. U.S. defense names are not doing well this morning. It seems they're being left out of this deal. And Tesla has some issues in California. Interesting. California's going after Tesla over what California accuses them of being deceptive advertising practices around autopilot, full self-drive, the whole self-driving thing could potentially take a chunk out of Tesla's sales. Let's stick around for the end of the show for that one. In the meantime, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today, shall we? As always, don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit the subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every single day. The S&P 500 is modestly positive this morning, up about 14 points or 0.2% in the green. The Dow is up by 113 points, 0.2% up as well. And the NASDAQ leading the way higher, up a quarter of a percent here, 48 points higher for the NASDAQ. So stocks up a little bit here this morning. We've got the dollar's a little bit stronger at 98.42. That's up by 20 basis points, reversing the declines in the dollar of the last few days. Looking over at the bond market, we have got yields higher on the long end and lower on the short end. Once again, the Fed does not control the long end of the yield curve. The 30-year Treasury, 4.831. That is higher by almost one basis point. Not a very big move. The 10-year, 4.163. That's higher by about a point and a half. The 2-year is at 3.498, higher by almost 2 points. And the 1-month is off by a point and a half, lower 3.657. Some interesting things on interest rates to note this morning. We got the Mortgage Bankers Association average 30-year interest rate, or 30-year mortgage interest rate, 6.38% for the week ending December 12th. The average contract interest rate on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage with conforming loan balances in the U.S. increased to 6.38% in the week ending December 12th. That is higher than the 6.33% in the previous period. Now, why am I highlighting this? Because this was the week that the Fed cut by 25 basis points. The Fed lowered interest rates, and yet a 30-year mortgage got more expensive by 5 basis points. We've actually seen 3 rate cuts now in a row from the Fed, and the 30-year mortgage did not care. It has not budged since the middle of September. And just a reminder, guys, the Fed does not control the long end of the yield curve. We are looking at the 10-year yield here. Let's zoom in on the last couple of days. All right, here we go. December 10th is when the Fed cut. That was Wednesday. We did see rates drop, but now we're pretty much right back to where we were, 4.16, 4.17. Interest rates have not really moved much. Now, I also want to zoom way out on this chart. All right. We're going to set this to, say, weekly candles. And we're going to zoom. Actually, let's set this to monthly candles. Why not monthly candles? And so you can see it. We're going to set this to line candles. Now, let's look going all the way back to the post-World War II era. You can kind of see what's going on here. For the last 2 or 3 years, look at what we got over here, this pennant pattern. That is a consolidation pattern and a continuation pattern. After this big run-up that we saw in the beginning of this decade with the big inflation that we saw of 2022, we have been consolidating since the end of 2023. When we break out of this pattern, I expect interest rates will continue climbing because we had a 40-year period of consistently lower interest rates. The era of easy money, I think it's over. And I think the Fed hasn't figured that out yet. They're still going to try. They're already printing money again. It's going to cause inflation to come back. When that inflation comes back, long-term interest rates are going to rise again because people are going to demand a higher interest rate. Fed's going to try more QE to fix the problem, make inflation worse, just like they did in the 70s, until they realize they can't use that old playbook anymore. They haven't figured that out yet, but they'll sure try. And I think we're entering a period where we are right now more resembles the post-World War II era where interest rates just went consistently higher for about 40 years. Nobody alive today has experienced anything like this, like that 40-year post-World War II period. Everybody in finance today has cut their teeth during this, during consistently lower, the era of Zerpenberg. Nobody is prepared for what's coming. And that's why I say, guys, there's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming because they're going to keep trying to print to solve this problem. And of course, that will keep the precious metals rallying. All right, so let's talk about what's going on here. Looking at the commodities board this morning, we've got gold, spot gold higher, 2374, about 0.5% higher at 4326 for spot gold. February COMEX gold futures at 4357, also higher by $25 and change, or about 0.6%. But it is silver that's having the good morning here. All right, we are off the highs here now, 65.15 for spot silver. We were as high as 66.52. So we are coming down a little bit here now, but still up $1.38 or 2.16% higher. March COMEX silver futures are at 65.25. We were as high as 66.63 earlier tonight. Still up $1.95 or 3% higher. For those March COMEX futures. I like the shiny. Guys, again, be careful about that price slam. We've got copper is higher by 1%. Platinum up by 2%. Platinum, $1,925. Absolutely ripping here over these last couple of days. Palladium up 2.7%. Along for the ride with platinum, $1,700 for that. Crude oil is actually catching a bid this morning, higher by 1.6% or 88 cents a barrel, $55.99 for February WTI futures. Looking at some of the charts here, guys, let's set this to daily candles. Oh, this is the gold to silver ratio. That's not what we want here. We're looking at the wrong chart. Let's look at the gold chart first. All right, gold. I think gold is poised to have another nice run here. Gold outperformed silver pretty much all year until about September when silver started to play catch up. And that's when we saw the gold to silver ratio start to decline. Now we'll show that chart in a minute. The gold to silver ratio is back more towards historical norms. I know people have conflicting opinions about what historical norms are. I'm using the last 40 years as a guide. But we saw gold pull back, and now we're kind of grinding back higher towards this same level where we topped out before. I think gold is about to start ripping again here. Now, the silver chart, just absolutely beautiful since the start of 2025. Silver has more than doubled. I'm not going to try to do any kind of TA on this chart here, guys. We're in uncharted territory. I mean, some of you better technical guys maybe could take a shot at this. The only thing I saw on this chart was this cup and handle pattern that we hit a couple of weeks ago. We have now taken out the price target of that pattern. And so, again, uncharted territory at 65 and change. Looks like we're heading lower right now after going over 63 overnight. And that gold to silver ratio, keep an eye on that one, 66.27. We went as low as 65.4 this morning. And I've drawn that red line on the gold to silver ratio at 65 because that is the average of the last 40 years or so. Let's zoom in just on the last 10 years. The last time we were down at this level was during the silver squeeze in February of 2021. And that's when Mr. Slammy took over and we saw silver start to underperform gold from there. Remember, the gold to silver ratio moving lower, that is silver outperforming gold. When it moves higher, that's gold outperforming silver. It was back here in April when we saw the gold to silver ratio pushing up around 105 that I started pounding the table on metal saying, guys, it's not going to stay here long. I started buying silver hand over fist, and man, have we ripped ever since. So we're right at this level now, right back around 65. We bounced here in 2021, and we bounced here in 2016. Will we stay there, or are we going to look something a little more like this? Now we're going back to the beginning of the 1980s on this chart here, and you can see we actually spent a decent amount of time underneath this level. My God, all the pop-ups this morning. Maybe we break through this level, and we spend a couple of years below 65 like we did here in the earlier part of the beginning of this century in the 2000s, or maybe like we did in the early part of the 80s after the Hunt brothers tried to corner the silver market. So maybe we're entering a new 10-year period of silver outperforming gold, or maybe we're going to bounce off this level for a third time. Either way, watch that gold to silver ratio. It can help inform you about the price of silver relative to gold. All right, let's talk about these data center stories this morning. A lot of data center news this morning. Oracle's $10 billion Michigan data center in limbo after Blue Owl funding talks stall. They went to private credit. They tried to park all that debt in people's 401ks, and now people are saying no. Investment firm concerned about tougher debt terms and the risk of delays to the vast project. This one just broke this morning. Oracle's largest data center partner, Blue Owl Capital, will not back a $10 billion deal for its next facility as the software group faces increased concerns about its rising debt and artificial intelligence spending. Blue Owl had been in discussions with lenders and Oracle about investing in the planned 1 gigawatt data center being built to serve OpenAI in Saline Township, Michigan. But the agreement will not go forward after negotiations stalled, according to three people familiar with the matter. The private capital group has been the primary backer for Oracle's largest data center projects in the U.S., investing its own money and raising billions more in debt to build the facilities, which Blue Owl typically owns and leases to Oracle. Scrolling down here a little bit, people close to the Michigan deal said lenders pushed for stricter leasing and debt terms amid shifting market sentiment around enormous AI spending, including Oracle's own commitments and rising debt levels. In other words, the people that were going to lend this money have doubts about Oracle's ability to pay it back. And so they wanted more money. They wanted more favorable terms. And Blue Owl's like, you know what? We're out. As a result, the deal was less attractive financially for Blue Owl than its earlier projects, according to some of the people. Blue Owl was also concerned that the Saline Township site being built by developer Related Digital might face delays. Blackstone and Blue Owl declined to comment. All right. So private credit says no. Where else do you go? How about Uncle Sam, or in this case, Uncle George? OpenAI hires ex-UK Treasury Chief Osborne for global AI push. And I'm sure this has nothing to do with the government bailouts that the company insists they're not asking for over and over again. OpenAI has hired former UK Treasury Chief George Osborne to lead a new effort to work with governments on building artificial intelligence infrastructure, tapping a high-profile political figure as countries race to secure the data centers for and computing power needed to run advanced AI systems. OpenAI's chief operating officer, Brad Lightcap, said in a social media post Tuesday that Osborne will serve as head of OpenAI for countries. Lightcap said governments need help understanding how AI fits into their economic strategy and public services such as healthcare and education. Oh, yeah. If you like what these shitbots have done with AI slop on Facebook and what they've done with hallucinating legal briefs and things like that, you're going to love what they do with your healthcare and your education. The hire of Osborne, who will be based in London, is part of an initiative OpenAI announced earlier this year to partner with national governments on AI infrastructure and localized versions of its products. Bloomberg reported in May that OpenAI for Countries is intended to help governments expand data center capacity and tailor tools for local languages and needs funded by OpenAI and participating governments with an initial goal of 10 international projects. All right, that's their goal. And they're trying to get the government to pay for the data centers because Oracle sure as heck can't get Blue Owl to pay for it. How about we get some Bitcoin mining shitcos involved while we're at it? Hut 8 shares jump as ex-Bitcoin miner signs $7 billion AI data center lease. Hut 8 has signed a deal valued at about $7 billion to lease a data center in Louisiana, it said on Wednesday, as former cryptocurrency miners pivot to meet surging demand for artificial intelligence infrastructure. Guys, the AI bubble and the crypto bubble are now attached at the hip, inseparably so. They will go down together. Its shares rose 21% in pre-market trading, adding to roughly 80% jump this year. The company will sign a 15-year lease agreement to develop 245-megawatt data center in the Riverbend campus. Construction of the first phase is expected to be completed by early 2027. By the way, what is the logic behind a 15-year lease of a data center full of chips that right now everybody's arguing over whether they're going to last 4 years or 6 years? Why would you lease them for 15? This is so unbelievably stupid, but there it is. The transition from crypto mining to AI hosting has become a key trend for firms like Hut 8, CoreWeave, and Applied Digital that are repurposing their access to high voltage power, cooling systems, and specialized real estate. These assets are increasingly scarce as AI developers race to deploy NVIDIA graphics processing units and other essential hardware. Hut 8, once a pure play Bitcoin miner, has spent the last year repositioning itself as an energy infrastructure platform. The new deal involves partnerships with AI model developer Anthropic, who doesn't have enough money to pay for this, and infrastructure provider FluidStack. Alphabet-owned Google is providing a financial backstop for the 15-year term, a move that highlights major cloud providers' urgency to secure capacity for power-intensive AI technologies. And there you go. Why is Google providing the financial backstop? Because the people that are going to loan the money probably to build this data center won't do it unless a big tech company co-signs on this lease, guaranteeing future cash flows. This is a huge liability. It's going to have to live somewhere on Google's balance sheet here. But for now, Hut 8 stock is ripping. It's up 16.5%. It was up more than 20% at one point this morning. Doing pretty good here. $42.70 for Hut 8 stock. This thing is up 80% year to date, guys. It's not going to stay here long. This stock's going to slowly bleed out when this bubble collapses. Now, why are we teaming up with Bitcoin miners and why are we creating special purpose vehicles? These are good questions. And we've got a billionaire real estate developer is asking those questions this morning. Why this billionaire real estate developer is waving a red flag over data centers. And that developer is Fernando de Leon, the founder of Leon Capital Group. And we're going to scroll past his background story, which is pretty interesting, by the way, if you want to check out this deal. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on with these data centers. While big players like Blackstone, KKR, and Bain Capital are buying in, De Leon said he is sitting it out. The thing that I can't quite square is the data center play. I look at a data center that's $10 billion, right? That's funny he should mention $10 billion because about an hour after this article came out, a $10 billion data center project got put on ice when Blue Owl Capital pulled out. But I digress. First of all, there haven't been any exits above $4 or $5 billion. You haven't seen comps, so that worries me a little bit. Everybody's paying way more money for these data centers than any data center has ever sold for. Then I see large tech companies, the largest companies on the planet with $4 trillion market caps saying, I don't want to own this asset. Think about Google co-signing the lease instead of just building it themselves. I don't want to have this on my balance sheet. So I ask why. Why doesn't the largest company in the world want to own its own asset? De Leon said. The AI business is everything for them today, for the large hyperscalers. And so they're saying, no, you build it, you finance it. De Leon surmises that what is inside these data centers, the technology of artificial intelligence, will quickly become obsolete. Him and Michael Burry both. AI, after all, is designed to make everything more efficient, including itself. And the value of these centers is not the four walls, but what's inside. These 15 and 20 year leases that developers are relying on, he suspects, are Swiss cheese leases, as in full of holes in the agreement over time. De Leon said his biggest concern is that big private capital investors are getting the money they manage from things like pension funds for teachers, police, and firefighters. Again, nobody saw that coming. When they say, I'm going to own this asset and lease it back to one of the hyperscalers, they're putting other people's money at risk, he said. So that's some interesting commentary from a billionaire real estate developer. If they're so great, how come the hyperscalers don't want to own them? Why are they doing all this creative financial structures to keep it off their balance sheet and avoid the reporting requirements? A very Enron thing to do. Meanwhile, OpenAI is in talks to raise $10 billion from Amazon and use its chips. Another custom chip development deal. OpenAI is in initial discussions to raise at least $10 billion from Amazon and use its chips, a potential win for the online retailer's effort to broaden its AI industry presence and compete with NVIDIA. The deal under discussion could value OpenAI north of $500 billion and see it adopt Amazon's Trainium chip, a person with knowledge of the matter said, asking to remain anonymous to describe private negotiations. That's the same $500 billion that OpenAI has been stuck at since October. Their valuation has stopped rising. That is an important thing to note. Talks, however, are at the preliminary stage and terms could change. A deal would mark a win for Amazon's fledgling semiconductor division. While NVIDIA dominates the market for the powerful chips required to create AI platforms, developers such as Meta are starting to explore rival offerings from the likes of Alphabet's Google. The Trainium chip is a key element of Amazon's strategy to stand out in AI, complementing its cloud division. Amazon Web Services is the largest seller of rented computing power and data storage, but it has struggled to replicate that dominance among AI developers, given intense competition from the likes of Microsoft, one of OpenAI's largest backers. So Amazon is giving $10 billion to OpenAI, so OpenAI can give the money right back to Amazon in exchange for Amazon's Trainium chips. And I have to wonder, are data center credits involved here? Is Amazon paying with cash, and that cash will be used to buy the chips? Or is Amazon paying with coupons for free data center rental? Again, so OpenAI can hand that money right back to Amazon. Another circular financing deal. These things are just daily occurrences now. Shifting gears a little bit, we have got Tricolor founder Chu is being charged over alleged fraud. That didn't take very long at all. Tricolor founder Daniel Chu was charged by federal prosecutors with conspiring to defraud lenders and investors of the company. The indictment accuses Chu and other executives who had worked at Tricolor of operating the company through systemic fraud. Tricolor filed for bankruptcy in September after shutting down more than 60 locations across the U.S. Southwest. Prosecutors said at Chu's direction, executives repeatedly defrauded lenders through various schemes, including double pledging collateral, manipulating the descriptions. They also said Tricolor classified assets pledged for collateral to make near worthless assets appear to meet lenders' requirements. That's Jamie Dimon's first cockroach there. Jamie Dimon drawing a lot of attention to the cockroaches, even as his bank are technically the ones underwriting them, because most of the money being lent in private credit is originating at the big banks, but they're using intermediaries and middlemen. So it's all right. They're not lending directly to the cockroaches. They're just lending to the firms that are lending to the cockroaches. We're probably going to see something similar from First Brands here and probably from Carriox Capital and many more. These will not be the last ones. Meanwhile, Trump orders blockade of sanctioned oil tankers in Venezuela. They are banging the war drums once again. President Trump ordered a blockade of sanctioned oil tankers going into and leaving Venezuela, ratcheting up pressure on Caracas as the U.S. builds up its military presence in the region. Venezuela is completely surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America, Trump wrote on social media. It will only get bigger, and the shock to them will be like nothing they have ever seen before. The move threatens to choke off the economic lifeblood of a country that was already under severe financial pressure, but it will have a less profound impact on global markets due to the diminished status of Venezuela's oil industry. Now, that's interesting there, the diminished status of their oil industry, because I think that's really the goal here. They're saying all kinds of things about drugs and cartels and narco-terrorism. And yeah, that's going on, but that's not what's really going on here. Trump said he was also designating the Maduro regime as a foreign terrorist organization, and he accused the illegitimate regime of using oil from the stolen oil fields to finance themselves, drug terrorism, human trafficking, murder, and kidnapping. Stolen oil fields. That's interesting, because there's some truth to that, and there's also some lie to that. These are Venezuela's own oil reserves, but these oil fields were developed by American companies. And then once those oil fields were developed and producing, Venezuela nationalized them, meaning they took the infrastructure that American companies had built and then said it's ours now. And then they ran them into the ground, and now Venezuela can barely move any oil. By targeting oil, Trump is hitting the linchpin of Venezuela's economy. The government's supply of dollars is almost entirely tied to crude sales and oil trading restrictions imposed by the U.S. earlier this year and are already pushing the nation to the brink of hyperinflation. So what do I think is going on here? I talked about this yesterday with Darcy Ungaro on his podcast and with Shannon Joy on her show. I think what's going on here is we read the writing on the wall in the Red Sea. All right, our Navy performed very admirable against the Houthis in the Red Sea. Our missiles, our ships are very technologically advanced and very good, but also very expensive, and we can't make them fast enough. And we were shooting down $40,000, $50,000 Shahid drones with $2 million SM-2 interceptors. The math doesn't work there. And so eventually we had to pull out of the Red Sea, and we didn't really accomplish our mission there. We weren't able to shore up freedom of navigation. And look, they were using Iranian-supplied ballistic cruise missiles and drones. If the Iranians ever decide to do the exact same thing in the Strait of Hormuz, there's not a lot we would have to say about it. Yes, our Navy can handle that, but not if we're simultaneously fighting the Chinese in the South China Sea. And so the U.S. and the West, say NATO, all our allies, we need another source of oil. We cannot guarantee the flow of oil from the Middle East if it came to a global conflict. And Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. They have more oil than Saudi Arabia. It's a freaking crime that their people are so dirt poor because these socialist idiots ran that industry into the ground. And so what President Trump is trying to do here under the cover of narco-terrorism is to try to inflict regime change on Venezuela so a U.S.-friendly administration takes over, allows U.S. oil majors to come back in, develop those oil reserves again, and then hopefully get some wealth flowing to Venezuela while also shoring up supply for the Americans and for our allies. Meanwhile, Germany, things are going boom as well. Defense stocks rally as Germany is set to approve a $60 billion defense splurge. We don't need to read too much into this one. We saw this one coming after that blow up in the Oval Office in February between Zelensky of Ukraine and Vance and Trump of the United States. Ever since then, European defense stocks have been absolutely ripping as Europe realized, hey, we cannot be guaranteed that the American military will save us. Europe needs to take responsibility for its own defense. They got rid of their debt breaks, which basically clears the way for them to print and spend as much money as they want to rebuild their militaries. The world is marching towards World War III. Guys, there's still time to turn it off. We don't have to do this. looks like it looks increasingly likely, but hey, maybe there's a chance, right? Maybe there's a chance this doesn't happen. In much lighter news, Warner Brothers pushes shareholders to reject Paramount's offer and why Netflix now has the edge. More drama around this Warner Brothers Netflix deal. Paramount tried to come in and say, no, our deal is superior. There were some questions about whether Trump would block the merger. Let's read about this. There's more drama for Hollywood's biggest takeover battle. The board of Warner Brothers Discovery urged shareholders to reject an offer from Paramount Skydance on Wednesday. Instead, Warner recommended they back a rival bid from Netflix. Now, Paramount had bid more money for the company, but Paramount's bid included CNN and the TV networks. Netflix's smaller bid didn't include the TV networks, so Paramount would or Warner Brothers would sell those off and then sell the rest of the company to Netflix. So this move is a clear sign that investors are having doubts that Paramount will get the deal done. The odds of a Netflix-Warner combination surged to 74% from 29% on Polymarket. Netflix shares climbed ahead of the open on Wednesday, with investors hopeful that the streamer won't have to up its bid for Warner. Netflix agreed earlier this month to buy Warner's streaming and studios business at $27.75 billion. That's below the $30 billion that, that Paramount had bid, but again, including the TV networks, with cable being spun out to investors. Barron's wrote last week, the uncertainty about the takeover was a good buying opportunity for investors, with Netflix shares now looking a lot cheaper than they were earlier this year. Some shareholders have been worrying about how Paramount would fund the takeover deal. Keep in mind, guys, Paramount is now controlled by the Ellison family. That's the same people who control Oracle, and they have a funny habit of promising money that they can't deliver on. See also the Blue Owl Capital thing this morning. Also of note in this story, Jared Kushner's private equity firm, Affinity Partners, had been an equity investor in Paramount's offer, but said in a statement on Tuesday that it was no longer involved per the journal. Affinity, run by Jared Kushner, that's President Trump's son-in-law, was involved in this hostile takeover push from Paramount while President Trump was threatening to block the Netflix merger. Conflict of interest much? Clearly there. Affinity, Netflix, Paramount, and Warner didn't immediately respond to requests for comment from Barron's. So a lot of drama there. Right now, it looks like Netflix may still pull this one off. But Kushner is now out of the deal. Does that mean Trump has the all clear to block it if he wants to, since his son-in-law is no longer involved? I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. Last one of the day, Tesla faces California sales halt unless it alters marketing. This is interesting here. Tesla sales in California are poised to be suspended for 30 days if it doesn't change its marketing practices that allegedly misled consumers about its driver assistance technology, the state's motor vehicle department said. The agency said Tuesday the suspension won't take effect for 90 days to give the company time to appeal or come into compliance. The California DMV accused the company of exaggerating the capabilities of its autopilot and full self-driving software, and had asked an administrative judge to weigh whether a suspension is warranted. Tesla shares fell as much as 2.2% on the news in post-market trading. Look, Tesla, Elon, they're known to exaggerate. They're known to overpromise and underdeliver. California is now saying, hey, you can't sell any Teslas in our state if you're going to do this. I'm sure this has nothing to do with Elon Musk's venture into politics. All of a sudden, he's persona non grata in certain states of a certain color. That being said, there's probably a little bit of truth to both sides here. So Tesla shareholders, be on the lookout for that one. And guys, I just want to say thank you very much. Wow, we got a lot of these today. Thank you so much to Spacecraft. Craft in Space. It says the economy is so bad, even Philip Rivers, unretired. Philip Rivers. All right, I got to Google that one. Who is Philip Rivers? I should know this. Is this a movie quote? Philip, oh, football quarterback. Yeah, guys, I haven't watched a play of football in years. Unretiring. We did talk about that one in the jobs report yesterday, that the slight spike in labor force participation from an admittedly low level, that unretirements could be an issue. Even former NFL quarterbacks having trouble ends meet, apparently. Thank you very much, Spacecraft. Yeah, don't watch much football, so that one slipped right by me. Whoa, Nacho Man. Thank you very much, sir, for the generosity. A big, fat, red one. Thank you so much, Nacho Man. I appreciate that. He says, spend some membership, Mish. Thank you, Jack. You're awesome. Nacho Man is using he's round-tripping revenue through Mish to add to the melon patch. Hey, I really appreciate that, Nacho Man. Thank you so much for the generosity. You are too kind, sir. And, hey, there's Mish with some memberships here. Thank you so much, Mish. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Again, thank you, Mish, also by way of Nacho Man. Guys, new members, just a reminder that you get one free Super Chat every month with that membership. So use that. I'll read and respond to your questions, thoughts, and concerns live on the air. Thanks again, Mish. Gordon Guanu, what's going on? He says, if you had a bet, which AI companies will rise from the ashes of the bubbles like Amazon Phoenix? I figure OpenAI because they're the worst. No, I don't think OpenAI makes it. If anybody right now, I'd say Anthropic. Now, for all intents and purposes, Anthropic's math looks every bit as bad as OpenAI's math. Just as far as the cash burn, they lose more than their revenue. That being said, from just based on anecdotes that I hear, Claude is very good at writing code. It's the one use case for AI that appears to have some kind of traction in industry beyond the stupid hype and the promises that will never come true. AI for generating code, which Anthropic is the best at, appears to be one legitimate use case for artificial intelligence. And Anthropic does that better than anybody else. So if I had to pick one, I'd say Anthropic. But it might be Anthropic in some other form. They might end up, you know, on the brink of bankruptcy, rescued by some other firm, gobbled up by some bigger big tech firm, something like that. But OpenAI is the worst right now. They have the second, at best, they have the second best offering on the market, probably the third or fourth best. Yet they have the highest valuation, the highest rate of cash burn. OpenAI is not going to make it here. They're done. And they're already asking for bailouts. The writing is on the wall at that company. Thank you very much, Gordon Guanu, for supporting the channel. Hunt and Cover, thank you, sir, for the generosity. He says, let's celebrate 70,000 subscribers, a milestone we crossed yesterday. Thank you, all 70,000 of you wonderful melonheads. I appreciate that. 70,000 strong melon patch today. Contagion is setting in. That's right. There is melonhead contagion risk. And you muckety mucks at the Fed, you cannot contain it. The melon vines are spreading everywhere. Thank you so much, Hunt and Cover. Appreciate that. And thank you all 70,000 of you who are subscribed to this channel. M&J gifted 50 Nobody Special Finance memberships. More baby melons in the patch. Welcome to the Melonheads. Thank you so much, M&J, for everything you do. By the way, M&J, fish on. Nice job. Thank you so much. Hey, the Dad Dan says, holy guacamole nacho 3086. Yep, that was my reaction as well. Big fat red one from Nacho Man. Thank you so much, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. And hey, thank you, Dad Dan, while we're at it, for being a Melonhead. How do we say this? Ian, EQ4OF. He says, congrats on reaching 70,000 subs. Well-deserved. Keep up the great work. It is appreciated. Thank you so much, Ian. Hey, by the way, everybody, feel free to tell 30,000 of your closest friends and family all about my channel, because the banana light getting a little long in the tooth. It's time to replace the banana light with a nice, shiny silver plaque that says 100,000 subs on it. So feel free to tell 30,000 of your closest friends and family all about my channel, and we'll get to that 100K number. We still got to get 80. We still got to get 90. Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Maybe 2026 goals there. Hopefully a silver plaque to replace the banana soon. Thank you very much, Ian. And thank you, KC Culp 6430 says, brokerage firms are propping up AI stocks by requiring 340% equity to short AI stocks. It wouldn't surprise me, to be honest with you, to see market makers, brokerage firms using some kind of shenanigans like that. You can only delay it, though. You can't do this forever. The government bailouts, all this stuff. At the end of the day, if you don't have a profitable or at least improving fundamental business underlying the whole thing, then you're just delaying the inevitable. And right now, these Oracle deals, these round trip deals, they're just delaying the inevitable. They can't stop it forever. And that's why I am now short NVIDIA. I think this bubble is done. I think the top was in late September, early October, coincidentally, right around the top in the Bitcoin bubble. And I think they're going to ride down together here. Thank you very much, KC Culp, for supporting the channel. M&J is back again. Says, congrats, you made it to 70,000 subs. Thank you, M&J, for all your help in getting to that number. M&J, I appreciate everything you do as a moderator, as well as helping to recruit for the channel. Thank you so much, M&J, for everything you do there. Ryu, man, I need to get better at this. Ryu Kirito. Ryu, thank you very much. He says, so silver up to $100. As a matter of fact, silver hit $100 Australian today. Hitherto, we will be reporting silver always in Australian dollars because it just makes it sound so much better. Doesn't silver hits $100 Australian sound much better than $66? Hey, I like the sound of $66 silver. Don't get me wrong, but $100 sounds even better. So thank you to my friends in the land down under for getting silver to $100. You guys are awesome. Thank you very much. Who else we got here? Espresso Beanies 8930 says, is it safe to say S&P 500 Santa rally already over? Santa rally already over. Well, the S&P has had a pretty good year. So there's plenty of gains to be had before year end. Not a lot of tax loss harvesting, window dressing. This end of year stuff, timing the market like that, honestly, not really my strong suit. All I can tell you is the underlying fundamentals pushing the S&P higher ain't there. It's the same BS that's gotten the S&P to this level to begin with. So we didn't have the fundamentals to justify this valuation in the first place. Means we don't have the fundamentals to keep them there. This AI bubble appears to be over. We're now on the downslope of it. So how do you engineer a Santa rally in that circumstance? I don't know. Maybe the Fed shoring up liquidity here, the $40 billion a month in T-bills they're going to buy. I mean, that's liquidity positive. Maybe that could push us higher into a Santa Claus rally. But right now, the vibes, I use that word. Right now, the sentiment is just too negative around AI. And that Blue Owl Capital deal is a big signal, as well as OpenAI hiring George Osborne. That's just smacks of desperation. OpenAI putting a government bureaucrat on their payroll like that. So I'm having a hard time seeing a Santa Claus rally here. But remember, guys, written right there on my sleeve in invisible ink, it says perma bear. So I am admittedly biased on the subject. Thank you very much, Espresso. Thank you to Crimson Permanent Assurance, the CPA. He says, for Midnight's Kitty Treats Fund. All right, Midnight. Eaton is good today. Midnight is not at my feet attacking them at the moment, which is probably the only reason why I've been able to concentrate this morning. He is getting vicious these days. When he wants to play, man, the claws come out. But thank you very much for the Midnight Treat Fund. Appreciate that very much. Crimson Permanent Assurance. Midnight sends his regards as well. Ryu is back again. He says, it is so ridiculous that our politicians sold out the U.S. so much that we can't handle a war on two fronts anymore. My sarcasm detector may be out of cal here. I'm not sure if that's sarcasm or not, that last part. Like, maybe it's not a good idea that we can fight a war on two fronts. Maybe, and I'm just throwing this out there, maybe it's a good idea that we have to pick, right? Like the kid at the toy store who's throwing a tantrum. I want both. And mom says, no, you have to pick one, honey. You can only have one war at a time. You can't have two wars. I'm sorry, I can't enable that. Maybe, just maybe, it's good that we can't afford to fight two wars at once. Just throwing it out there. Maybe we shouldn't fight two wars at once. And fighting one war at once kind of sucks, doesn't it? But yeah, they have sold us out. I do believe our leadership of the last several decades has been grotesquely reckless. And our defense industrial base has certainly atrophied. As much as we just pump money into the military industrial complex, we can't make this stuff anymore. And if we're going to fight two wars at once, especially two naval conflicts at once, we better figure out how to build those missiles again. Better get that together. Thank you very much, Ryu. Appreciate the super chat, sir. Real estate mindset, you bonkers SOB, my buddy Travis. He says, I love you, man. I love you too, brother. It got awkward there, didn't it, a little bit? I'm starting to blush. Sorry. But Travis, you're awesome. Love what you do. Thank you so much for taking up the fight on property taxes, you and Mitch. You guys are doing awesome work down there in Texas. Keep it up, brother. Check out Real Estate Mindset's channel while you're at it. He is a good friend of the channel and just a swell guy with a big heart as well. And I want to say thank you so much to all 70,000 of you melonheads who follow this channel. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with us this morning. I really appreciate the generosity in the super chats. Thank you so much. Also, you magnanimous melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys for everything you do. Links down there in the description should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm on the way out. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.